Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Zara Larson, it's a pleasure now to spend an hour with two featured guest segments. First up, of course, is Karen Stevenson from NetForm and also the Pima Connects project based now in New York. Hello, Karen. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good to be here.
You bet it is. And I'll be very transparent. I have the dear pleasure of having followed Karen's work for years, and particularly it was foundational for my doctorate work. So right out of the chute, Karen, I want to thank you for the knowledge you bring us in social networks and social capital.
Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Well, let me give a brief intro. Karen Stevenson is a corporate anthropologist and lauded as one of the pioneers in the growing field of social network analysis. In 2000, her work on understanding the informal structure of connections between people was actually catapulted into the public eye when she was featured in a New Yorker article written by Malcolm Gladwell. The specific topic at that time was the social dynamics of office spaces. In 2001, Karen's consulting firm NetForm was recognized by CIO Magazine, that's Chief Information Officer Magazine, as one of the top 100 firms leading innovation. Even before those accolades, she and her consultants have earned praises for leveraging their software, and I'll call it mindware, to solve a variety of complex problems, for example, within tribes in Africa, sections of the U.S. military, government systems such as the U.S. Post Office, and even medium to large multinational corporations. A global nomad, Karen lives in New York and is currently affiliated with the Rotterdam School of Management in the Netherlands. And this was preceded by 5 years at the Harvard School of Design and 10 years at UCLA. Karen earned her PhD in anthropology at Harvard University, master's in anthropology at the University of Utah, and bachelor's in art and chemistry at Austin College. And Karen is one of a very special set of original researchers who published widely in this area of social networks and social capital, starting maybe 25 years ago. So for Karen, this is not a new subject. So we're delighted to have her on the show to talk about her latest pro bono project that's right here in Tucson called Pima Connects, that's targeted to help our grassroots community leverage leaders impact social change. So again, thanks for joining us, Karen.
It's my pleasure.
Well, tell us about this point where you are in your career right now, all these wonderful projects you've had around the globe, yet you find yourself wanting to give back and be part of community social change now. This is really fascinating to me.
Well, it's been a wonderful journey for me over the last 25 to 35 years of research, as well as consulting and being a professor in universities. And after working so long in this field and helping to develop it and to move it and push it into business and in the not-for-profit sector, I felt that I could give back to the challenges that urban centers face, particularly in our country. Let me give you an example. In Philadelphia in about 2005 was falling on hard times, and they had a number of elected officials that were, you know, sent to jail on graft or whatnot, you know, fraud, things like that. And the people got so angry, and an editorial was written saying, where is the outrage here? Why aren't we doing something about this? So there were a number of dedicated citizens that brought Malcolm Gladwell to give a talk about this as a way of bringing attention to the matter. And Malcolm Gladwell was then approached by one of the leaders in the community, and she asked him, she said, how can we find these tipping points? If we could produce a tipping point in Philadelphia, maybe we could turn around this sort of slippery slope that we seem to be on, sliding down. And so he said, well, listen, I don't know how to do it. I just study this. He said, but I know someone who does. And if anyone could help you, it would be Dr. Karen Stevenson. So she called. He referred me, and she called me up. And what she didn't know is that prior to that, we've been doing exactly the same kind of research with public-private partnerships in the U.K. amongst the different provinces of the U.K. So this work had had 10 years prior experience. So we set about to do that, to find the hidden connectors. It was very successful in Philadelphia. We did a study, and then Louisville heard about this this work. So we did one there, and then from Louisville, Pima County, folks in Tucson heard about it. So it seems to be growing organically, and it's my pro bono work, and I'm happy to give back to communities who have a real passion for trying to come together in a more collaborative way and either start new initiatives or turn their communities around, such as in the original case of Philadelphia.
Or actually probably fly in a different way to position things they may have already underway, but take it to a new level.
Exactly. I mean, it's not that people are you know, sitting on their thumbs. They're out there doing things. But the interesting thing is for the people who are really doing things, they probably don't have time to market or to talk
right.
about it. They're just being observed by their good colleagues and friends, and they work silently, rolling up their sleeves, getting things done. And it's these people we want to know. We want to find them. We want to identify them. And we also think that because they're so busy doing their good works, they don't have time to really connect with each other.
Yeah,
so
that's exactly
right. To the NSF or to some other government organization for funds or resources, when in fact the resources might be standing 2 feet away from them if they were brought together in a room with all these other hidden connectors. So we find that not only do good things come from recognizing these wonderful people, but that by connecting them together, it produces yet another level of engagement where people can become better organized and start to share more meaningfully resources amongst the community of these key connectors.
That's right. Karen, before we go too much further, perhaps for our listeners who aren't that conversant in social network analysis, could you kind of just give us a primer 101 of what's that all about?
Yes, social network analysis is about how people are strategically connected to one another. And it's not about direct connections as much as it's about indirect connections. Let me give you an example. A friend of a friend is a friend. An enemy of a friend is an enemy.
Right.
That's an indirect link of two. Well, when we are working in our communities or in our organizations, whether they're private or not-for-profit or government or education, we pass through hundreds and thousands of many of these indirect linkages, more than just two. They can be hundreds of links, indirect links long. But human beings can't track that because they're so busy trying to seek out information or seek somebody else out to either get information or exchange information. So we're so focused on the task at hand that we don't really recognize the invisible structures that we move through. So a way to visualize those structures, a way to capture that data, is to actually ask people to think about who they're connected to when it comes to different ways of working. For instance, who do I routinely exchange work with, or who would I go to talk about a new idea? Sometimes those are the same people I work with. Sometimes they're very different. And when we ask people these questions, naturally they give us their biased answers, and we expect bias. But when you aggregate everybody's bias together, what you end up getting is a pretty accurate, I guess, a three-dimensional topographic map, if you will, of what that culture looks like in that community or in that organization.
Mm-hmm.
And there's various ways of analyzing that. And one of the things that I've done over the years is, being an empirical scientist, I've been raised in the sciences. Instead of just doing one or two or three case studies, like some folks do inside the hallowed halls of academia, because you don't really have to collect a lot of information, I've collected over 500 organizational examples, and then I keep them in a database, and I bootstrap it all the time to test these diagnostic theories out. And it's exactly what doctors do. They don't know what good blood is. It's because they've taken lots of blood samples to where when they look at it and match it up against the people, they can figure out what a normative range of health is.
Mm-hmm.
If your blood is too low on one side or too high on the other, they're going to give you some advice about how you need to exercise more or change your diet, et cetera, et cetera. And it's the same kind of thing when you look at a large corporate body, if you will. It's like a, almost like a living entity. It's comprised of a lot of people, and you either have healthy cultures, so-so cultures, sometimes really unhealthy, nasty cultures. And a way of looking at how people are connected is to do social network analysis. And because I've worked with so many organizations, we've pretty much nailed it. We can do these diagnostics in the same way you go in for a physical once a year. We can do diagnostics on organizations and see whether they're healthy or not. And if they're not healthy, we also have been able to nail about 10 or so prescriptive measures in which we can advise folks to do. And they're customized, of course, but there are some standardizations to them in the same way that there's standardizations across human blood around the world. So it's not unlike the medical metaphor.
So what would some of those diagnostics be, Karen, for organizations then?
Well, for instance, a lot of people think, I'll just give you a very intuitive one, because I can go into a lot more detail, and it's probably more than we can do here on the radio, but Sure. Let me just give you a very counterintuitive one. A lot of times people think that, oh gosh, I've really got to be connected, you know, I've got to show that I'm really connected. And so sometimes people will over-report, and that's fine, let them over-report, because we also look at the one-way and two-way ties. But the thing is that if a lot of people in an organization are doing that and they're saying that they're talking to a lot of people because they really are, and they're doing chat, talk, more than what is really required for necessarily getting the work done, why are they doing that? Let's just think about that. They're probably doing it because either the work processes are broken and they're having to confer with one another to figure out how the heck are we going to get this thing done because our processes don't work. They could have become disengaged with the organization and don't really want to work and really don't care to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so are just hanging out, chatting with each other. I've seen that happen a lot. And what happens is that will produce a very dense work or social network. And when you compare that against all the other networks, you'll find that it has a thicker density, or another way of saying it in the medical metaphor, the blood is too thick. You know, you don't drink enough water. You need to drink more water. So it's the same kind of thing here. They're spending way too much time. Now, if you're the CEO or if you're a manager and you're walking around, you can't necessarily see that all the time.
That's right.
Whenever you see people talking, you think that they're talking about whatever the task is at hand. It's only when you can really do this overall measure, and no manager can be at all places at all time and see this. So when you do these overall measures, you can really tell that a highly dense kind of a social/work network is actually a sign not of a good functioning organization, but of a dysfunctional organization. And it's the precursor to bureaucracy, which is sort of like a cancer inside an organization. So we can find precancerous cells, if you will, and try to correct for that.
That's right. So also the whole aspect of social network analysis, of course, is to remind us that regardless of what the organizational structure looks like, what's on those charts, that may indeed have nothing to do with how people get the work done.
Oh, well, that's for sure.
Yeah,
you have the formal structure, but you have lots of things going on anyway. And that's par for the course. That's normal. But when you have stuff going on anyway, what we're looking at is we're looking at the differentiation amongst the way people are connected when it is the formal structure.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
It's not the fact that there's just one other structure. That one other structure, the social networks, in quotes, are really comprised of layers of knowledge. So
mm-hmm.
We're not just looking at a single structure that stands in contradistinction to the formal organizational structure.
Right.
We're really looking at multiple layers.
So, of course, now this relates to your project here in Pima County, this Pima Connects. If we're looking at a way to really enable social change, that it's really you're looking for going to help us find those different layers.
Right, because people can talk a good line, they can tell a good story, but who are the people that roll their sleeves up and get things done? I'm not saying that you don't need good speech makers or good rhetoricians, but you also need people that have a firm grasp on reality and know what it takes to get things done. And so, you know, it's a big world. The problems are challenging. We need all good minds at the table. But the thing is that many times some rhetoricians, or and sometimes we call those politicians, might be out front because they're verbalizing an issue. But you can verbalize an issue until the cows come home, as we say in Texas, and it still isn't going to get it fixed. So what we're trying to find are the people down below the radar who really don't have time to pop their heads up and give speeches, but who know how to roll up their sleeves and get the job done. We want to have those people be a part of the solution because they are actually making that solution happen. Now, no one connector, no one hidden connector knows all the solutions. And that's the lovely, that's the beauty about this. Once we identify, once the people kind of have a long enough time to nominate people who they think might really be connectors, let's imagine that we've found them all now. Or well, and it could be thousands, but let's say we bring a small subset of them into a room, say 100 or so. Well, they each have little pieces of the solution in them. Mm-hmm. But they don't know that they have the little pieces of the solution until they start to have a conversation with those other people in the room. And then all of a sudden they find that, hey, my problem is really an answer to your issue, and somebody's resources over here maybe could help me out. And they actually, the connectors, because they're so good at connecting, are now at a new level of connecting, and they're able to kind of bring not only the connectors together, but they're also able to construct complicated solutions. Well, actually, yeah, sometimes they are complicated solutions, but they certainly are solutions for complex social or civic problems or challenges.
And in fact, probably because they then are already on the ground, they're also more capable of implementing the solutions and getting things to stick. Can you give us an example of, you know, how this tipping point played out in Philadelphia, maybe an example of some connectors coming together and how it helped with, you know, child advocacy or some other social challenge they were taking on?
Well, I don't live there, so I don't have the deep context that would be required to give a really thorough answer to your question. But what I can do is I can say to you that we had, Philly has a magazine where they published like the 100 most powerful, mm-hmm. And then we had 100 connectors, and there was only a 1% overlap between those two lists. And the 1% overlap was they're running for the mayor, but they're in the level below that in the state government. I forget the actual name.
Okay.
He was the common person on that list. And it turns out after that, he didn't get elected to be mayor because of our list. He was probably on that path anyway. But the point is that he saw that there was very little overlap, and he really wanted people to get things done. So what he did is he put together a number of civic projects to try to turn around this issue that was going on in Philadelphia, and he populated those committees with those people on the connector list. He put them on the list, it's what I call the unusual suspects. They they weren't the usual ones; they were the unusual ones. And he said he's come to give a talk, I think, in Louisville, and he reported back on what a change and what a difference that it's made. So I know for a certain that it has made a huge, big difference in Philadelphia. It's just that I don't have the detail that a Mayor Nutter would have.
So basically what you're sharing with us is this premise that power and title in the community doesn't necessarily mean trust and effectiveness then.
Correct. Yeah, it's great to have power and title. That's wonderful. But you also have to be effective. Sometimes power and title can be a barrier to effectiveness. So you need people in those positions, but you also need to recognize that there are other people that really know how to get things done, and they need to really work together.
That's great. Now, Karen, so here we are in July, and so the Pima Connects project is underway. Can you tell listeners how they could participate and get involved in this effort?
Well, what they want to do is they want to go to the website. And there's a website, I believe it's, gosh, you would ask me that. It's www.pimaconnects.org.
.org, that's correct.
And then what you do is you go there and you can nominate as many people as you want and different people. You know, you can nominate the same person for multiple questions or you can nominate different people for the multiple questions. It's, you just need to think about who do you know that would be a connector in relation to the questions that we're asking you. And what we like to do is we like to collect thousands of nominations. And so it kind of takes a while for the word to get out. So we're going to let this thing run for a number of months until we get a number, you know, thousands of nominations. And then what we do is we go through and we analyze those nominations on, you know, we cull the list for, you know, sometimes you get ballot box stuffing, things like that. I mean, mm-hmm. typical things like that. We take a look at that. The data is looked at by an outside firm. That's my firm. It's not anything local to Pima County. And then what we do is that because we're expert at this, we take a look at that data, and then we cull the list, and then we look for statistical breaks in that list.
Right.
And usually you can get them around 100, sometimes 200. And then you also have to think that because everybody's donating their time to this effort, that to organize like a recognition event to bring all these people together and things like that, you know, that's a pretty significant cocktail party you're talking about.
That's right. And so you've retold that the idea of bringing these people in the room, though, that then that's when the magic starts to happen.
That's when the magic happens. And then what we do is we ask those people who they know amongst the 100 that are in the room. We're 100 plus. And then we find out how they're connected or not connected. And then we can facilitate greater connection.
And so the whole process then, we are targeting sometime in 2011 for this kind of conversation to go on?
I think so, because you want to give it time to run. We're in the summer months. I call them the months of drought. You know, people are distracted. They're having vacation. They're relaxing. They're taking a little easy at work. So maybe they're not as motivated to go on some website and nominate. I hope that's not the case. But, you know, we want to let it run through the summer months and then kind of into the early part of fall, so that we're sure to hit people as they are coming back into the working world.
Very good. Well, Karen Stevenson from NetForm and representing the Pima Connects project, I thank you today for being on Circles of Change. And for our listeners, do go out to pimaconnects.org, take a look at that survey, and get an opportunity to nominate people. And Karen, we'll look forward to keeping track of this very exciting venture to help us tap the right talent here throughout Pima County to take our society to the next place.
I'm so excited. I can't wait for the results.
Very good. We'll look forward to having you on the show when that plays out. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.